Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by 100 Bogart Street, the brand new co-working space in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Learn more at 100bogart.com.
We asked our hosts what Heritage Radio Network means to them. Listen in to hear what they had to say.
Hi, everybody. This is Carrie Diamond, host of Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm here to tell you why I love Heritage Radio. It's all Dave Tatasciore. 100%. It's what keeps me coming back. Every Thursday, I pretend it's the pizza. I pretend it's the bomb squad. But it's Dave.
Do your part to keep Heritage Radio Network alive by supporting our summer drive at heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Good afternoon. This is Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair coming to you live on Heritage Radio Network. I am Amanda, one of the co-directors of Food Book Fair.
I'm Kim, the other co-director of Food Book Fair.
And we are your hosts of our show, as I mentioned, Recommended Reading. And Food Book Fair is a food media festival, mostly centered in New York, but also we've done events in a couple other cities as well. And we're all about celebrating food media. And so we are so excited to have Recommended Reading and get to bring other authors and innovators into our booth at Heritage Radio
and this
Network.
And this is a very interactive special edition of the show.
Totally. And I think in that case, we're going to get right into it. We're in the weeds on today's show, but it's a good thing. We're joined in the studio by Warren Bobrow, five-time author and cannabis alchemist, the author of Cannabis Cocktails, Mocktails, and Tonics, as well as my friend and former colleague, Jen Shelbo. She is a pastry chef who has turned her focus into sustainable legal cannabis practices. So there's really no other way to say it or beat around this. This is the weed show. This is our recommended reading weed show.
if you hear Amanda or I talking really slowly or just saying recommended reading again and again, that might be why. There are a lot of vape pens in here.
Recommended reading.
Oh, dear. Thank
chopped
you.
And screwed.
Okay.
The chopped and screwed version.
Someone prepared for the Weaver Our Weed Show. We're dazed. We're not confused, though. We are here with our guests, again, Warren Bobrow and Jen Shelbo. And since we have a lot to talk about on this subject of cannabis, culinary cannabis, just, you know, what the state of weed consumption, you know, in America and the world is at the moment, we're going to just get right into it. And Kim and I, we've talked enough, so we're going
to... You don't need to hear what we're reading, watching, and listening to.
We're going to ask our guests, Warren and Jennifer, what they're reading, watching, or listening to, and then we'll really, you know, get into the pot, as they say.
They don't say that, actually. But that's cool.
Yeah. So, Warren, what are you reading, watching, or listening to?
And while Warren answers, please know, and you might be able to hear this, he's actively making a cocktail.
I'm going to be making some tasty little cocktails with some rum agricole. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, Warren, we actually had the pleasure of Warren participating in an event at Food Book Fair 2017, and you made some amazing cocktails. The feedback from the cocktails was that they were very strong.
They are.
So
yeah.
we're preparing
but
ourselves
those, but those
right now.
Did not have any of the active ingredient
right.
in it. I can't tell you what's in these. But
okay. Well,
I can tell you it's not the same.
We'll look forward to being surprised.
Of course.
It's not weed, it's PCP.
Yeah. So so I just spent the past week down in New Orleans for the event, the yearly event called Tales of the Cocktail. And it was really an amazing time.
How are you still... I was going to say standing, but you're more like sitting in the studio.
I really don't drink, and that's the magical thing. I mean, working in the liquor industry does require me to taste, but doesn't require me to drink. So it was 100 degrees and 100% humidity, and I really didn't feel like drinking much more than one or two milk punches. That was it.
Okay, you heard it. You heard the secret from Warren. Okay, yeah. So have you been... So that's what you've been doing.
That's what I've been down for the past 7 days. I had a seminar on colonial spirits there. It was pretty amazing, and I mixed up some tasty little cocktails for Ramazzotti while I was down there.
Amazing. Jen, anything in particular that you're reading, watching, or listening to?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, so I've spent the last 14 months researching the cannabis industry and educating myself, so I have a lot to share about what the resources that I found really helpful. So if people want to learn more about the cannabis industry and
like what's on your bedside table or have there
well
been?
I picked up Warren's book because I wanted to know all about it.
Oh yeah.
And so I was awesome. I was prepared to have an intelligent discussion and I really I loved the book. I thought it was what I enjoyed was the fact that he used just different, when you think about infusions and getting cannabis into food, it's often an oil-based thing or butter, so making canna butter or whatever. And I just really appreciated that he had, for instance, a honey simple syrup.
With raw honey. From Bar Hill up in Hardwick, Vermont.
Okay. Yeah, and it was a cool way for me to see a different application of an infusion, and also being able to either use it in combination with alcohol or without. So if you didn't want to have that additional effect, or you want to do a mocktail because it's a medicine,
right? You want
something right before bed, just stir that into your tea or a tisane and. Like you'll be feeling really good.
Yeah. So you're on your bedside table right now is Warren's book, Cannabis Cocktails, and
really
then
I'm
your
honored.
Your tincture of choice.
Yes.
Or your
yeah.
Your
my pen.
Okay.
One of my vape pens. And then I do a lot of listening. But I listen to a lot of podcasts on cannabis and marijuana policy and business. And so I could tell you about some of those that I really love.
Can I give you a little shake while you're talking?
Yeah, let's do
it. This is not a sound effect.
This is real, live. You're listening right now. He's shaking.
That was not a sound effect provided by David Tatasciore, and he's the most excellent at providing sound effects, but this is a real life shaking going down. We are getting a cocktail made for us in the studio right now by Warren Bobrow.
I think you should talk about the ingredients in here.
Let's hear what we got going on.
What we did is we took some rum agricole from Martinique, which is very special rum that is made from freshly crushed sugarcane juice as opposed to molasses, so it has a certain richness and floral quality to it. And it's really the rum that I like using. I will say it's Clément. I don't think they gave me permission, but I did tell them while I was down in New Orleans that I've been using their stuff. And then the cranberry syrup that I use today, and I use most often, is from Fruitations up in Massachusetts, my friend Allison Goldberg. And she does give me permission to use her stuff with certain substances. And so I'm pouring some tasty little cocktails made with decarbed cannabis that's forced by nitrous oxide into the molecule of the liquor that I use. And I make tasty little craft cocktails with it. fully bioavailable, 100% bioavailable, using the Ardent, the Nova Ardent from up in Massachusetts also.
Do you know what it is,
Ardent? No, I have no idea.
Go ahead, please.
So Ardent is a decarboxylator, so you put your cannabis into a container and it heats it.
Like a thermos.
Like a thermos. It heats it to the appropriate temperature to convert the THCA, which is the acid form of THC, into THC, which is the psychoactive form. Is that right?
That is exactly right. And yes, it does it perfectly every single time.
I love this tag team expert panel.
It makes it perfect every single time.
In addition to that, the Ardent decarboxylator is, it makes it so that it's...
It makes it so it's 100% bioavailable.
Right.
So you actually could eat the bud once it comes out of the little chamber.
Yeah.
Because it has microprocessor controlled, it's heat jacketed. It's like something that we would use in culinary school. You know, I remember we were making soups and stocks, and they would teach you to do it in a pressure cooker or a tip kettle that heats all the way around all the time, very even.
Okay. Yeah. And also cuts down on the smell.
Right. There is no smell.
In your home.
I live in an apartment building, and there's no smell at all.
So, whereas, like, if you're making canna butter in your home.
Yeah, you got to watch
over the stove or something, it could really.
Oh, wait. We forgot the most important ingredient, the bitters from Crude in Friendly, North Carolina.
Are they in there?
They are. We got to put them in.
So. Oh, okay.
What's the name of this cocktail?
This is the Heritage Cocktail for Heritage Radio.
Oh.
We knew you would choose wisely today.
Of course.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We really wish that everyone out there could be enjoying this with us. But you got to check out Warren's book, Cannabis Cocktails, and make it yourself. But thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, that's delicious.
Okay. Mm.
While we're enjoying our cocktail, we're just going to take a short commercial break. We've got to pay some bills so that we can buy some more cannabis. So head to heritageradionetwork.org, click on the Beating Heart, become a member, support all of the incredible shows that are on air, and we will be back shortly to discuss more with Warren Bobrow and Jen Shelbo.
This is the story of men and women who shed not only their clothes, but also their...
Bogart Street is finally open and ready for Bushwick. 100 Bogart is a brand new, state-of-the-art co-working space that provides turnkey workspaces, including open layout desks, meeting spaces, and furnished private offices. Members have access to top-notch amenities such as custom furniture, high-speed internet, spacious kitchenettes with coffee and tea, printers, scanners, and much more. Alongside their professional work environment, 100 Bogart also provides exclusive educational programming for any curious entrepreneur. Heritage Radio Network has made their new office home at 100 Bogart and will host many events there in the future. For more information about their co-working space, visit 100bogart.com and become a member to network, create, and educate.
Welcome back. This is Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair. I really wish that everyone could be in the studio with us in the back of Roberta's at Heritage Radio Network today, because we're joined by Warren Bobrow, five-time author and cannabis alchemist, and Jen Shelbo, former pastry chef and now sustainable cannabis expert. There's pizza, there's vape pens, there's cocktails. It's a party.
Amanda took her earrings off for this one.
It's things are getting pretty crazy in here, but gonna you know, as I said earlier, you know, we're in the weeds, but in a good way.
Tasty. And the best ingredients money can buy.
Yes, and this
tasty
and all this, medical cannabis and really good stuff.
Cool. This is our first annual cannabis show. Maybe we will repeat it again. It's we're talking about everything having to do with sustainable cannabis, cannabis cocktails, cannabis edibles, which is pizza, which is actually what I wanted to talk to Jen about, is that we used to work together, and Jen is an incredibly talented pastry chef.
Thank you.
And chef. And I want to know kind of if you could tell our audience a little bit about where you worked and how that also then influenced your decision to move into this new field.
Yeah, thank you. So we met each other at Gramercy Tavern.
Yes.
And I listened to the show with Mark Rosati, and I was like just having such a great like flashback and like thinking back on like we worked with just a stellar group of individuals that have gone on to become successful in their own right, and I feel really grateful that I was part of that group of people, and everyone's career evolves, and I'm also on that path where I've worked. I opened my Alino, and then after Gramercy, and then I went to a much smaller little place out in Brooklyn, and then I kind of looked at what I've been doing and where I want to go, and I realized I was really interested in going back to school and learning a little bit more about current business practices. And I found Bard College. They have an MBA in sustainability. And I really believe that sustainability needs to be incorporated into businesses in the long term to be successful. Sustainability is a huge term. And I had originally, when I went into the program, I thought, I want to be involved in food systems and creating systems that can feed a lot of people in responsible agriculture and regenerative land practices. And then I found the cannabis industry. Not that I didn't know it before, but there was this new opportunity because of the legal markets at the state levels. And we are in a time in which prohibition is slowly melting away. Mm-hmm. The last prohibition was 80 years ago in terms of the prohibition on alcohol. And so to be living at a time when we can experience the prohibition of a legal, illegal substance is just unprecedented. It's how cool to be involved in this now. And I think sustainable business practices are key to being successful long term in the industry. So that's my ideas. I'm trying to get into an operations role and get involved in the industry. Warren and I were talking, and he was like, well, obviously you need to be in an edibles company. Like you have a background
you have a
in pastry
background. And high end culinary. And that's what we really need in the business. It's not the, you know, the people who are sitting down in the you know, dabbing every day, and I'm glad for them. But really, at the end of the day, it's all about flavor and it's all about quality. And I present myself to the top end of the house. I've only worked in restaurants and white tablecloth. So why would I want to, you know, work in the well when I could be at the top of the house?
I think that flavor is going to be the flavor of cannabis is really going to translate to many consumers. People that love food, love the smell and the scent of food.
Yeah.
Will also cannabis in its so many different permutations will start appealing to people in the same
way.
And
from a culinary, and also, you know, I write about wine for a website here in Brooklyn, Drink Up New York, and I'm able to speak about wine as a culinary ingredient and something that's part of our culture. I would love to be able to discuss cannabis as equally as potently, because what it means to me is that you have a greater acceptance for a product which 10 years ago was still illegal. It's still illegal in many places, but we're fortunate that we're seeing change.
Right. Yeah. So I think you touched on this a little bit. Let's take it back. Talking about kind of the history of how people consumed cannabis, and this is clearly something that's evolving and changing. So kind of like, I was out to dinner with my family on Sunday night, and I told my dad that we were doing this show. And, you know, I told him kind of, you know, that I'm like, Dad, there's edibles, there's vaping, there's, you know, oil, there's all different. And he's like, oh, wow. He's like, well, we didn't have any of that. So I kind of, maybe if either of you or both of you want to talk about kind of how people consumed cannabis previously and then kind of what's happening now and where we're going.
Well, you know, I want to touch on the parental thing because it's important to me.
Okay.
My father's gone, so he can't possibly yell at me for what I'm doing right now. But he made his anger very, very apparent by disowning me. And that was because I wrote Cannabis Cocktail. So I have to say that it's very important to understand that when you work hard and you're able to apply yourself, anything is possible. And that's why I dedicated the book to him. And I said, he taught me to stand on my own two feet and succeed at what made me happy. So I was able to take this book and take it to the next step. So in flavor, there's always things that we need to be doing. And I think through my book, it's very important that it was done from a medicinal standpoint. It was done to heal as opposed to recreational. So I had to make it very, very clear that the average person would find this book to be irresponsible. But from a medicinal standpoint, it works because I have a legitimate reason. Many people have legitimate reasons, and we use this in a less antagonistic fashion than sitting out in the street and smoking a joint. I love doing that. I love being with people, but this is easier.
Okay. So how did people previously mostly consume cannabis?
Well, they were probably making brownies. I mean, I remember my uncle made brownies back in the 60s. So, you know, we did that. We smoked. You know, I experimented with brownies when I was 16 years old. I think it was an Aerosmith concert at Madison Square Garden that I first had a pot brownie.
Okay. And if you want to go way, way back, cannabis was legal in the United States up until
1947.
About, yeah, or 37.
Yeah, 37. But yeah. 47, they absolutely put the kibosh on it.
Yeah, but there's a whole social history here as well as previously, it was cannabis and cannabis tinctures were available in pharmacies.
The pharmacy, yeah.
It was in like the if you can go online and search like the United States Pharmacopeia from 1932, and there is information about
cannabis tinctures.
Yeah. It was not called marijuana until this guy Anslinger, who became like the head of the DEA or
something. I like how smart you are about this. This is great. I know all of this, but I can't seem to extrapolate it. So
yeah,
that's great.
So this guy Anslinger just decided to.
Was in collusion with William Randolph Hearst because the paper industry was being threatened by hemp.
Yeah, it's insane because, there's so many layers to cannabis as a medicinal.
It goes back 5,000 years in China. They were you know, the pharmacopoeia shows that cannabis was used for healing 5,000 years ago. In fact, recently there was an unearthing of an Egyptian mummy, and they found cannabis oil in the sarcophagi.
That was preserved.
That was preserved.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So how did people use it? They used it for all the things that we're going to start using for in the future. But because of the prohibition on this substance, including on industrial hemp, which is extremely useful in paper, could revolutionize
cosmetics, building
plastics,
materials.
Yeah.
Sailboat ropes. You couldn't buy sailboat ropes made of hemp until just recently. You had to go to Canada or Europe for that.
Yeah.
And as my late stepfather would say, try cutting a piece of cannabis, of hemp rope, putting it in your pipe and smoking it and see what happens.
It's terrible.
Nothing.
Probably. Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, so people
That's a
use...
very specific reference.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's one that resonates with me because it was something that, you know, when you had a sailboat and you didn't want to use those polypropylene ropes, which are terrible out at sea, hemp was great because if it broke, you could seal it up together and it makes a really good knot and it holds just as tightly.
Hemp is one of the most... one of the strongest fibers in the world.
Yeah, our Declaration of Independence is printed on it. Yep. That's why it's lasted this long.
Yeah. It's real. The plant is amazing. Mm-hmm. And where do we go from here? How were people enjoying it before? How will people enjoy it in the future? I think actually now the possibilities with technology are somewhat endless because mm-hmm. previously. You used a tincture method, which was...
Right. It's sometimes problematic. You don't know how many milligrams of THC you're getting. You know, you take it under your tongue, and you might be completely destroyed. Your neighbor's saying, where's the beef? And I'm having a good time.
Yeah.
We just don't know.
And now there's testing available, so there's better information about what is in the items that you're consuming, mm-hmm. And what does that mean for how you will expect to feel as you knowing yourself?
But you know, I to your point, having a product that's organically grown and organically propagated, biodynamics play a role. I'm fortunate to have grown up on a biodynamic farm, so I'm familiar with the processes of Rudolf Steiner, and I would love to see that translated to the legal cannabis industry. That'd be fabulous. Show that we were really raising the bar.
There are some sun-grown mm-hmm. Cannabis farms. Like, really, sun-grown is probably best known on the West Coast, mm-hmm. specifically in the Emerald Triangle in Humboldt County. They mm-hmm. they have created some really beautiful and unique strains and harnessed the power of the sun to create the cannabis, or grow cannabis. And they use... Not everyone, but a few people that I've talked to use these biodynamic growing...
Yeah, and sustainable organic biodynamic.
And when we think about what are we demanding in our food, like organic farming is really popular. It's probably been one of the most explosive consumer segments in food, in vegetables, and fruits. And I think that's really going to change. That will parallel... the interest in responsible, sustainably grown cannabis.
Yeah, the other thing, the wine industry is paying very close attention because they're growing cannabis plants between the grapevines. And then some of it, that decarbed cannabis gets its way into fine Napa Valley Cabernet Sauvignon. And it sits there in barrels for about a year or so, and they bottle that stuff, and it's delicious.
But there are medicinal benefits to that.
I think most of it is recreational. But that's okay, because I'm glad that they're doing it. And I'm happy to say that I've tasted it, and it's absolutely delicious.
Warren, did you receive any, like, in all honesty, like, how hard was cannabis cocktails to get published?
It was very easy to get published.
Okay.
I'm under contract with a really fabulous publishing house. And it seems that my books sell pretty well. I'm always surprised that they do. But when they do, it's a nice surprise. And it seemed by my past record, I was able to put together a project of this, you know, magnitude. And it did get, you know, put together. And I think, you know, it's been on the shelves for a year now. It hasn't done as well as I would have hoped to have done with it. But I haven't been able to really dedicate as much time to it as I would like to, because I still work in the liquor industry. So there's a lot of pushback with cannabis in the liquor industry. I go to the WSWA, you know, trade shows, and they all say, what are we going to do about cannabis? And it's not in a good light. So I'd like to try to take my, you know, my fame, if you will, in the liquor industry and apply it to the cannabis industry and say, you know, I know how a three-tier system works, and I know how you do business from a liquor standpoint, because I was there and I've done it, and I've done brand ambassadorship jobs around the country, and I believe in my talent, but I'd love to take my talent and apply that to the cannabis industry, because you're not playing with drunks. They're not drunks there. People are pretty laid back. They're easygoing. When they shake your hand, they look you in the eye, you know they mean it. They're not just, you know, plastered and they're going to forget everything. And unfortunately, that's the industry I work in. That's the industry that made me famous. But I'd like to take it to the next step.
Hmm. Okay. And so there's, it's, we're kind of in an in-between phase right now where maybe there's certain stores or places that wouldn't stock your book, but...
Well, no, actually, I don't think anyone has said that it was a banned book, but I will say that it has been described as a dangerous and bad book.
Ooh.
And a national magazine went out and said that in the article, which made me very, very angry because they just don't know me. I mean, they don't know that I had a legitimate medical reason for writing the book, and they don't know that I took it very, very seriously, not from a recreational get all your buddies drunk and smash and stone type of book. But my publisher would not have published it. And then, of course, there's the other side that is just going to see cannabis cocktails and think that's just irresponsible. And I didn't write the book for them. I wrote it for people who have a legitimate reason to use it and want to be, you know, don't want to be quite so antagonistic. And that's how I live my life. And if they don't like it, they should probably get in touch with me because I could have a nice conversation with them over a beer and we can see what our, you know, the things that we have in common as opposed to the things we don't have in common.
Though even I think that is such an incredible intention and motivation for writing the book, and that's great. And I hope there are a lot of people that you do hear from who say it's benefited them.
I hope so,
for the
too.
Reasons that they use cannabis. But also if one's purpose is to get a little stoned and have a good time, people have drinks to get a little drunk and have a good time.
And they smoke cigarettes.
And they drink bourbon.
Yeah, I wrote a
that
book
are
about
legal.
Whiskey.
You know. They do all these things and they're so...
So it's tough to be hypocritical, but they're going to be. But, what I learned when I was down in New Orleans during Tales is every time I wanted to... You know, people knew me not for my whiskey book, not for Apothecary Cocktails, not for Bitters and Shrubs, and not for my fifth one, Craft Cocktail Compendium. But they know me for cannabis cocktails, and they want to talk about it. Everyone wanted to talk about it. Bartenders are really fascinated by it, and they see it as something that where the industry is going. They want to do it. They want to experiment. They know friends who have made tinctures. They probably have made cannabis cocktails themselves, and they want to share that knowledge. And they get really, really excited to talk about that stuff. And when I did my panel on colonial spirits, I opened it saying, this afternoon, we're not talking about cannabis cocktails. And everyone, clapped. It was pretty amazing. But, standing room only and,
you got your
nice
fans.
Crowd.
That's
I got
awesome.
My fans. But I also have my dissenters.
Right.
But I think through any great author is always going to have people who don't agree with them. There was a 2,500-word dismissal of my book on Amazon. I thought it was extremely unfair. And that was not the place, nor the time, nor anything to tear me a new one, especially going into Christmas. But such is life. That's what people do. They're mean. They're bullies.
I think we also have years and years of ingrained bias against this drug due to the campaigns by
there's a cartel against it. And a lot of it has to do with the liquor industry. They're losing their ability to print their own money. And the simple fact that I know about that is because liquor companies manipulate their product. There is no set of ingredients on a label. So they can put caramel coloring, they can add sugar, they can add glycerin and still call it rum. And, that's taking advantage of the consumer. And I always say, if you're going to come out with a distilled spirit, please at least tell me what's in it. But that'll never happen. So I wanted to look to the cannabis business to be more transparent. We have done that.
Jen, I'm sure you can speak to that. But, the liquor industry in specific, they feel as if there's just not room for everyone.
I don't know. But up in Washington State, the Liquor Commission runs the cannabis, which is very interesting. So I went to a breakfast several weeks ago for New Jersey Business Magazine. And they were really funny. They had no idea that in Washington State that the Liquor Commission runs everything. And they were like, that sounds like a good idea. Then at least the three tier is already in place and distribution's already in place. We don't have to create logistics out of scratch. And it was very interesting because the people in the room were not your typical late 60s, early 70s hippies. They were conservative businessmen who were there for a reason, and that reason was taxation, and they wanted to help drop the taxes that have been plaguing us in New Jersey for so long. There are no new sources for taxation, and they were there to listen, not necessarily to speak, but to listen. It's fascinating.
I think many when states design regulations for legalization of adult use cannabis, they often look to alcohol regulations, those that are already in place, for some guidance. So the extension of cannabis, a cannabis regulatory body coming out of the alcohol regulatory body in states is, I think it's a somewhat of a natural progression. And these two drugs are seen, or these two, yeah, I guess they could be both called drugs, alcohol and cannabis, are seen, you know, they don't want kids to get their hands on them. So no underage drinking, and no underage smoking. And that's that.
And responsible use.
Yeah, responsible use.
And it's so, very, very important.
And so that's part of why you often see a cannabis and a liquor board combined together in one body. Mm. They're already the liquor board is already used to going to bars and making sure that, you know, there's no underage drinking. There's certain signage in place and that kind of thing. And so I think
we call it ABC.
Yeah.
You know, Alcohol Beverage Commission.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so the having cannabis as part of that.
And they're already experienced in legitimizing the drug, and the drug is alcohol. There really is nothing more destructive. But as I said, you know, I'm not going to chew my leg off to save my arm, and I'm pretty good at what I do, and I love what I do. So if I'm going to work in another business, I better know exactly what I'm doing before I get there.
So what's the cannabis of the future? Like where is it going?
I would love to say, you know, pre-bottled cocktails and little, you know, like those little 6 ounce bottles of 7-Up and Coca-Cola that you see in fine restaurants. I would love to have pre-bottled cannabis cocktails.
Social use may be part of the future of cannabis, because you can go to a bar and drink whatever you like, but smoking indoors is not allowed. And that includes vaping and vape pens. A space where people can gather together and consume cannabis as a community, that is part of what cannabis is all about, in terms of a social use and recreational use. It's a fun way to get to know people. So that may be facilitated in a public space, because people like to go out and drink, and they should also be able to go out and use cannabis responsibly. How it's enjoyed, that may be one way. I see also a real overlap between the food industry and the fine dining aspect of that. There are Morn and I were talking about this. In cannabis, there are things called terpenes, which are really distinctive flavor essence that is also found in things like black pepper and lemon and rosemary and a lot of herbs and things that we already are used to. But what gives many of the strains their distinctive smell are this combination of terpenes. And I think that will be a real overlap between appealing to people who already love fine food and dining and care about the earth and love to smell, you know, an organically grown carrot or whatever, you know, like that's really an extension. But also the wine profiles, hops and beer and that kind of thing, like people that already are interested in consuming food mindfully will also appreciate what cannabis can offer them. And that'll either be through vaporizing or possibly converting that into a very specific and distinctive alcohol or other liquid that they can ingest, or through an edible, in some way, shape or form. Yeah. So, I see there's a lot of possibility.
and as culinarians, as we both are, obviously, we think in flavor as opposed to just think in metrics.
Right. Well, most recently, this is a few months ago, I was reading a long piece in The New Yorker about cannabis, culinary cannabis, and absolutely. Consumer packaged goods and brownies and cookies and really fine, beautifully artisan-made chocolates and all these things like that.
Yeah, yes. But do you notice that there's such a heavy emphasis on sweet?
There are, and see,
I'm not about sweet things. I like savories and bitters. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for flavors with cannabis that are not your typical bar of chocolate and, you know, infused popcorn. There are some great products out there for that, but I'm not going to be the one who's going to bring that to the marketplace.
But to ask you, culinarians, of what you've, anything you've experienced in the marketplace, whether sold commercially or that something you yourself has tried out or someone has gifted or shared with you, is there anything that has particularly stood out that really brought out these flavors in a certain way? Something that would totally blow out of the water anyone's stereotypical ideas of the pot brownie made by your uncle.
Yeah. Well, so appealing to my, like, my pastry.
Especially as a fine dining pastry chef.
So when I was able to go, I've gone to Denver a few times for different conferences since I've been interested in this whole, in this industry. And what struck me was that there's definitely a marketplace for beautifully crafted chocolates and bonbons packaged beautifully. Mm-hmm. So it'll be like you would maybe normally bring a bottle of wine to, you know, to your friend's dinner party. Instead, you bring a box of chocolates and you cut the chocolates in half. And this is part of the end of the meal experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so these really beautifully crafted chocolates. And I was just like, oh, I could totally get down with that. Like in the flavor combinations, because you can then add whatever, you can make any filling you want and have it infused. And I think that is something that really stood out to me when I was there as something like, oh man, this is gorgeous. This is not your typical dry pot brownie. This is a whole new level of consumption and sharing and gifting. People love beautiful food. And they love to eat beautiful food. It's a treat. It's treating yourself. And that is just, there's a clear opportunity in the cannabis industry in terms of edibles. And that's kind of where my mind is a lot.
Yeah. And then on my side is I would love to have ready to drink mixers in the cannabis side without alcohol that someone could mix conceivably with the best craft spirits the money can buy.
Amazing.
Ready to go.
So as unfortunately our time is ending on the recommended reading weed show today, maybe, you know, as it's what I've really loved, you know, I love listening to both of you. I think what might be really interesting for our listeners is maybe each of you could leave us with, like, Warren, what would be like your starter cannabis cocktail or mocktail like that? And then Jen, like, what would, you know, a pastry chef, so like how could people, if they want to experiment with like making a pot brownie but they want it to be good, you know,
and not dry,
right? So Warren, what would be like your starter?
Well, decarb cannabis first off.
Okay.
Essential. A simple syrup or a flavored syrup that you like. Always fresh squeezed juices, shaken, never, you know, you could stir, of course, but I like a great shaken cocktail with this and finished off with a great seltzer. And it would be dry, refreshing, maybe some bitters to, you know, for balance, and everything is good. Simple, fast, and delicious.
Yum. Jen?
I would say finding a way, again, the decarbing your cannabis is important. It is essential in creating an item that will be like psychoactive, but decide whether you want to use butter, or often coconut oil, is another way to go. So you could almost any of your favorite recipes you can replace. You should be able to replace one for one. If you made a pound cake and it called for a pound of butter, then, maybe you don't want to do your whole pound of can of butter, maybe cut it. And see how it affects you. Start small, start responsible and grow.
Right.
You know, if you're like, okay, wow, this is really intense, then you're going to have to only eat a half of a slice of pound cake, you know, like, that's the name of the game.
The Thai food principle.
Yes.
Don't take your friends who've never had Thai food for Thai spicy. They'll hate you forever.
So
apply it to can of pound cake also.
Yeah. So that I would say test out your favorite recipe, whatever your go-to is. I've been enjoying the vaping. I think there's a lot of cool things that are happening, especially with incorporating the terpenes. It's almost like creating your, there are companies that create, you know, a mixture of THC, CBD, and different terpenes to kind of encourage a mood.
Mm-hmm.
So whether there's an energetic mood, there is a relaxed mood, there is a, you know, there's a focused mood. There are different moods that a lot of companies are trying to create through products that they're crafting.
Aromatics.
Yeah, aromatics and THC.
THC, good old THC.
CBD.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Well, our guests improved our mood today.
Good. For sure.
That is...
If
for
we
certain.
Put a smile on your face, then we've succeeded.
Yeah. Thank you for having us. Thank you for having
me. Thank you for having me. Oh,
absolutely.
It was great. I'm honored. Please. Yeah. This is, yeah, this is
thank you for being here.
Yeah, of course.
On Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair.
Cheers.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you next week. Thanks Bye-bye. For listening.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.